Welcome to the Farm Machinery Digest Road Test Podcast. I am your host, Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer. The purpose of this show is to provide to those in agriculture a resource to examine a vehicle through the unique needs of our community. Each test truck will be subjected to around 1,000 miles of use and will be evaluated in areas that would be of concern to those in agriculture. It will also include a chassis dyno test for horsepower and torque. So jump in, sit down, buckle up, and join me as we take a spin today in the 2019 Ford F-150 Super Crew Limited. Hello, my friends, and welcome to this first of road test that we've ever done with the Farm Machinery Digest. So you may be asking yourself, what is an F-150 Super Crew Limited? Well, first, what I would like to tell you is that it is an F-150 through and through. And the Limited is a special edition that is Ford introduced for 2019, and it is above the Platinum. And what makes the Limited different specifically is the drivetrain. There is some other features, a unique interior, unique wheels, has 22-inch wheels instead of 20-inch wheels, but that's not the purpose of this show. The purpose of this show is to be a grease under your fingernails evaluation of vehicles that the farmer or rancher would use. And I'm not going to spend time or waste your time discussing the beautiful leather seats this truck had, the wonderful sound system, the moonroof, the chrome door handles, and what have you. I want to get down to the nuts and bolts of what this is about, because all of that is subjective. You may like it, somebody else may not like it. But this road test is about mechanical stuff, about how will a vehicle perform for you in your agricultural operation and what you need to know about it. Now, there's probably nothing about an F-150 that no one likes. I don't care what brand color you're into, not color, right, that's tractors, but for trucks, what is your brand loyalty? But no one can deny that the Ford F-150, which has been the best-selling vehicle in the United States since 1977, and the best-selling pickup truck since prior to that, since the early 70s, I believe, is a great vehicle. You may be a Ram guy, you may be a Chevy, GMC guy, it makes no difference, but those are your personal preferences. But we can't take anything away from those competing brands, and also in the same token, we have to acknowledge that the F-150 is a great, great truck for many respects, otherwise they wouldn't be selling so many. Now, what the limited edition is, it's a luxury pickup truck, but the most important thing is that it has the Ford F-150 Raptor drivetrain. And what that includes, it's got the Raptor drivetrain, but not the Raptor off-road suspension. So it has a traditional F-150 suspension, but the Raptor engine, the Raptor transmission, rear-end differential ratio, and also the Raptor high-flow dual exhaust. And the engine is the 3.5-liter EcoBoost high output, whereas a standard F-150 EcoBoost, if it's the 3.5, because they also have a 2.7, which, by the way, is a fantastic engine, but the 3.5 is rated at 375 horsepower, the normal EcoBoost in an F-150, whereas the Raptor engine in this Limited is rated at 450 horsepower and 510 pounds-feet of torque. So it's got about 75 more horsepower and about 75 more pounds-feet of torque than the standard issue EcoBoost, and that's why it's called a high output. But also, the Raptor enjoys a 10-speed automatic transmission versus the 8-speed automatic in a traditional normal run-of-the-mill F-150 with an EcoBoost engine. So what we have here, in essence, is we have a luxury pickup truck that's a higher level than the Platinum, shares a lot of the amenities, has a lot of unique things, but really the focus is the drivetrain, and that's what it is all about, is the drivetrain. And that's what I am going to discuss along with other things. And as I said, I'm not going to get mired in the electronics in the truck, the crash avoidance system, the backup camera. That's for Motor Trend and Car and Driver, or that's not for us farmers. All right, if you like that stuff, that's great, but this is what we're going to be here. So let's go through a list of things, and I am going to look at this truck through the eyes of a slash an automotive engineer slash farmer, because those are the two hats that I wear. If anyone has listened to my Idle Chatter podcast, you would know that. So let's first talk about build quality, because build quality is essential to everyone in agriculture. You buy something, it's a lot of money. This particular truck was $74,000 in all bells and whistles. It's not cheap, all right? And that's the Limited. It's not cheap, but we need to discuss build quality, because that's what we're going to get our return on investment. And the subject vehicle that I had was built in the Ford Dearborn plant in Michigan. And I believe all of the F-150s are built there now, but I may be wrong on that, so don't take that to the bank. But I'm a stickler for build quality. And coming from the automotive industry, I know what to look for. I'm not tooting my own horn. I know what to look for as build quality is concerned. And when you look at this truck, this F-150, well, first of all, when Ford brought it to the farm and they came down the driveway with it, the thing is drop-dead gorgeous. All right, it's drop-dead gorgeous, and it was black with aluminum wheels, beautiful leather upholstery, and it is gorgeous. But looking beyond its beauty, as a matter of fact, I named her Black Beauty in the almost 3 weeks that I had her, but because she was so pretty. But when you look at a vehicle, you need to look beyond the what they would say down in the city, the bling. And though this truck had a lot of bling and looked very city, she was designed to work country. So, you know, look city, work country. But the quality of this vehicle is one of its outstanding features. If you look at the body fit and finish, the gaps between the doors and the fenders, the way the hood closes, the way the doors close, the way the tailgate closes, the sound of the door when they close, the underhood, the neatness of all of the wiring and any vacuum lines or what have you underneath the hood, the way the suspension is designed and assembled, the paint quality on the vehicle, the uniformity of the paint. What I like to do is I like to rub my hand all over everything, and I like to feel the body gaps. I'll even go with a veneer caliper and measure them if I think they're in doubt. The levelness of the hood, the interior trim stitching, the fit of the interior pieces, the fit of the dashboard pieces, they all speak quality. And that's really important to us, because in the farm community, we need things to last. And though the fit and finish of the body panels are not a true indicator of how reliable any vehicle will be, but it shows the mindset of those that built it and the mindset of those that assembled it. Built it meaning the company, and those that assembled meaning the workers in the Dearborn, Michigan plant who put it together. So kudos for Ford on this, because this truck is world-class build quality. And with rare exception have I seen something that has world-class build quality that really did not carry that throughout the whole life of the vehicle. No squeaks, no rattles, no air leaks, nothing whatsoever. Things work as they're supposed to. Great job, Ford Motor Company, and to those guys at the Dearborn assembly plant. But the next thing I want to talk about is really what makes this truck special, and that's the engine and driveline. So let me talk about the transmission first instead of the engine. It's Ford's new 10-speed automatic transmission, and it is a gearbox that was actually did a lot of its preliminary development work. It was a joint venture between General Motors and Ford. So as an aside to this, if you look at a GM truck or any that has a 10-speed automatic transmission, it shares a lot of the basic structure that this Ford unit does. And in this particular instance, Ford and General Motors worked together and they shared cost on it. And it's, you know, what's happening in the industry, it's just like in farming, right? You could share a machine with somebody, you could co-op something, you rent something from the co-op. Is that the industry is seeing that a lot of these redundant development costs could be shared by friendly competitors. And I'm really glad to see two great American companies Ford and General Motors. General Motors not as great in my eyes anymore with closing the Lordstown, Ohio plant and moving production to Mexico, but that's not for this road test. But anyway, to work together, and the stuff that the consumer never sees, the case of the transmission, maybe a bearing or what have you, they share the development costs. And then at that particular point, each company builds their own unit. So Ford built this transmission, and if you find a 10-speed automatic in a GMC or Chevy pickup truck, then that, they built that transmission. But the gear ratios, the calibration, the torque converter is unique to every manufacturer. So you can't take the torque converter from a Ford and put it in a Chevy, right? So this is the new 10-speed automatic, and as I would like to say to you, it is a sweetheart. I was very interested to see. I said to myself, boy, 10 speeds, this thing is going to be hunting back and forth and constantly shifting, but that was not the case. What it actually does is it skip shifts. It has an advanced algorithm that looks at the throttle angle, the load on the engine, the speed, the road speed, and what have you, and will skip gears. So it starts out in first, which is unlike a lot of German luxury vehicles that actually start out in second or third. It starts out in first, and then it will go, and depending upon the state of driving, it'll usually skip a gear. So go 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, and then 10. And if the conditions demand something more, then it doesn't skip the gear. Go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then it may get up to 5, and then based upon what this advanced algorithm sees, it may go from 5 to 8. So it doesn't shift up through every gear in every driving scenario. And I was able to glean what was going on after I found a function that allowed me to show what gear it's in on the dashboard. And I did not, that was not evoked when Ford brought the vehicle to me. But as I was driving it, I would say, I'm very particular about shift quality. And the one, two, the first shift, which I perceived was, I thought was the 1-2, was very nice, and completed the shift action very quickly. Which, you know, and you might say to yourself, is that, you know, I don't care about that hot rod farmer if it completes the shift very quickly. Well, anybody who's a racer realizes that they used to put shift kits in automatic transmissions, so they would shift hard. This doesn't shift hard because it's got torque management. But anyway, it doesn't shift hard. But the need to complete the shift quickly is paramount to the clutch wear inside the transmission. Because if the transmission shifts very slowly and just slides that gear in, so every time that transmission shifts, you're wearing that clutch material out. It would be like a guy with a manual transmission riding the clutch out and not releasing it on every shift. So the length of time for it to complete the shift is really critical to transmission life. And also, it's critical to transmission heat. So that's important on the farm, because if you buy a truck like this, you're probably going to be working it, pulling some sort of trailer, pulling a load in the bed, and you want to have it complete that shift in as least time as possible, the execution of the shift, without a lot of heat and not being obtrusive to the customer. You don't want it like a 69 GTO where the guy has a turbo 400 set up where it's just boom and your neck snaps. So it does not do that, but it completes the shift very quickly. And by completing the shift very quickly, not only does the power in the engine not drop off, but you have a linear input of power when you're moving a load. You're trying to move a trailer. You're moving a trailer from stop. You got a trailer load of cattle on there, and you're stopped in town at the stop sign, and it's going to go 1, and it's going to go then to shift to 2, and you wanted to complete that shift quickly between 1 and 2, so that you do forward inertia of the truck with the load keeps going. All right, so it does that, and it also has. In combination to that transmission, a wonderful, wonderful torque converter. The torque converter on that setup is gorgeous. And I'm a calibration guy, so I could really, I said to myself, the calibration tables for that transmission must look like the New York City Yellow Pages, because there's so many algorithms in it, and it looks at everything what's going on to make the proper decision, and what condition you're putting that vehicle in. And then again, why do I like the torque converter? Because the torque converter has a limited amount of stall speed to its slip, but it is able to work in a linear fashion. When you talk about anything like this, you want a linear, you want analog, a smooth operation. You don't want digital, on, off. And the torque converter, you're able to take that truck and you're able to, let's say you're backing up a hill to hook up a trailer, the modulation of the throttle and the slip of the torque converter is perfect. So you're able to just, every little input into the throttle, you will be able to cause a response in the torque converter to move that vehicle, and thus it makes it very, very, very controllable. And I saw that not only here moving it around on the farm, but when I took it down to put it on the chassis dyno and had to drive it up onto the rollers. Usually when you drive a vehicle like that and you want to drive it up on the roller for a chassis dynamometer, it becomes very jerky. You hit the gas and it goes, and it goes like that, you know. This was not, it was like a bull pushing up against the fence. It was just, you just poured on the coal very easily, very gently. And the truck rolled right up on the rollers. Over here on the farm, I was backing up and trying to get close to a piece of equipment, and I was able to just roll that throttle very, very easily and have a response to it. I didn't have to have a lot of throttle modulation to get a response, and then the response would become jerky. The other thing is that the trans has shift haul, different modes, great transmission. The calibration works with you. It's smart enough, I'd call it a smart calibration, to basically to anticipate what you're going to be doing next or what you're trying to accomplish, and it chooses a gear ratio for that. And under light load, I was able to get that at 40 miles an hour, 42 miles an hour going through town in 10th gear. And it was extremely responsive. And also what they did, I didn't talk about the engine part of this yet, but also what they did is that the turbos are very, very responsive. So what would happen is that you would tend to think, let's say I was going out of Hackettstown up to Schooley's Mountain, and then it was in 10th gear, and I started to climb the hill. And if you're driving it normally, not like a maniac, is that I said to myself, I would pay attention to the calibration, because I used to do calibrations, and I used to test calibrations critique calibrations for BMW North America. And I said, okay, she's going to pull down now from 10th to 9th or 8th on this grade. And it didn't do that. What it did is it allowed the turbos to add a pound or two of boost and did not evoke that downshift. Whereas with the old protocols, the old logic was don't build boost, let it downshift and let the engine work that way. So it really is a nailed down drivetrain. And anybody who's going to use this truck to tow will find that 10-speed Ford automatic transmission and that torque converter to be fantastic. And it's a really just makes driving this truck so easy and so enjoyable, because it works with you intuitively. It is, as an engine guy, a machinery guy, mechanical guy, you know, there's so much joy in having a machine that you feel that you're connected to. And I felt that this truck was connected to me when I was driving at that driveline and that transmission. Now, I have not driven the GM version of that transmission. Some people have told me that it doesn't seem to be as nailed down as this, but I would be bearing false witness. So, torque converter, transmission, beautiful. Let's go on to the engine. The engine, as I said, is a 3.5-liter high-output EcoBoost. Rated at 450 horsepower at the crank, 75 more than the standard one. When Ford brought the truck to me, they had it filled up to the brim with gas. There's a gas station about a mile away from the farm, so I'm assuming they stopped there, a Shell station. And the truck ran fantastic with the gas that is in it. I went down to my friend Bob Ida's dyno shop in South Jersey. And we put it on the chassis dyno rollers, and we made a pull on it. and anticipating about 340, 350 horsepower at the tires based upon the parasitic loss of the drivetrain. So if you do about 80% of 450 horsepower, you come up around that number. And then it returned 304 horsepower at the tire, which is fantastic. But I said to myself, geez, this thing should have a little bit more snot to it on the dyno rollers. And then it did nothing wrong, but then we were able to interface into the OBD2 system and read serial data, the data stream from the EEC5 engine controller, and Ford filled it up with regular gas. So on the dyno at full power, and it runs about 18 pounds of boost according to a manual boost gauge, an analog boost gauge that we hooked up, and that kind of confirms the dashboard boost gauge. The dashboard boost gauge doesn't have that much resolution, but I confirmed 18 pounds on a manual gauge, and it had minus 24 degrees timing. So that meant that it was 24 degrees after top dead center, and that was due to it having regular gas. There was no audible detonation. The engine has both direct injection and port injection, and it runs on the direct, starts and idles and runs at light load on the port injection and switches over to direct injection, being an injector for each cylinder. Subsequently, went back, ran the truck and took a road test on it, which I'll discuss in a minute. Took the truck, filled it up with 93 octane fuel, $102 worth. It's got a 36 gallon tank, 93 octane fuel, brought it back, and she made 368 horsepower at the tire, which works out mathematically to a little bit more than the 450 that Ford claims. So about 477 mathematically, it kind of works out to with a 20% drivetrain loss. So the take-home message here is that on the high output EcoBoost, if you run it on regular fuel, you're losing about 60 horsepower, so 60 to 64 horsepower versus on premium fuel. Everything else the truck does great. I mean, pulls everything, but if you're looking for maximum power out of it, then this has to be a 93 octane motor. And to Ford's defense, it does recommend 93 octane, but it's more than livable, and nothing's going to happen to an 87. So you're giving away a little bit of power there. And it is not listed as an E85 compatible vehicle. I would love for it to be E85, because I think with E85 and its 99 or so octane, that this thing would really wake up even a little bit more. But other than that, it is fantastic. Accumulated about 1,012 miles on this truck during my road test, and I got very, very good, surprisingly good fuel economy with it. Now, keep in mind that the fuel economy is going to be a function of everything. It's going to be a function of the thermodynamic efficiency, the engine, the drivetrain, the transmission, and the way you drive, and obviously the speed, and then the aerodynamics of the vehicle. So I can't change any of that. I could change my speed and the way I drive. I drove the legal limit here in New Jersey and in the northeastern United States, which is 65 miles an hour. And on a trip to Maryland, I took a long trip, well, relatively long, down to Maryland. It's about 250 miles one way to the mill, who was my agro liquid fertilizer dealer. And I needed to go back and bring my totes, or his totes, back, Ben over at the mill, bring their totes back. So I used that as a highway road test for the F-150 Platinum, and I can say that truck really shines on the highway. It's beautifully quiet. I took a decibel meter with me. It registers about 58, 59 decibels going down the road, no wind noise. The engine is 54 decibels at idle, that high output EcoBoost. The injectors are noisier than the mechanical aspect. The injector and the belt, the fan belt, are noisier than that engine. And going down to Maryland, she averaged about 26 miles per gallon. and then around town here, saying around town, using the truck for about another 600 miles around town, going for parts, going for coffee, going to the supermarket, just doing normal errands, going to the post office. She averaged 22.3. And then for the entire test, so when Ford dropped it off to when I gave it back, which included the dyno runs, about 7 dyno runs, going down to Maryland, sitting in traffic, doing everything, the total average for that, which would be a good indicator for you guys, because I drove slower on the highway at 65 than most people that are listening to this will be driving in their particular area, but also you're not putting it on a dyno. So those wide open throttle runs, everything, she averaged a 20.9, so just under 21 miles per gallon. And it just is a test. It's a testament to that EcoBoost engine and that drivetrain. Now, getting back to talk about something about the engine, that's a 10-to-1 compression motor, and that's where that fuel economy is coming from. Because years ago you had a turbo motor, it would be like 8-to-1, and there's no thermal efficiency. So with 10-to-1, this motor is very thermally efficient when it's working in the NA, naturally aspirated mode. So when you're going down the road with it and it's not going into boost. Two very small turbochargers. They're mounted low on the engine, down underneath, and they are very, very responsive. They're almost instantly responsive to the throttle inputs. And I actually found that I had a natural tendency to try to back out of the throttle when I saw boost come up, all right, and if I was going on the highway and pulling a hill, but I found that it actually does better on fuel if you just let it do its own thing. If you want to maintain that throttle setting, pull that hill. If it builds 2 or 3 pounds of boost, it ends up being happier than you trying to back pedal it a little bit. Ready? As far as the serviceability of the truck is concerned, believe it or not, it's not too bad. Nothing today is like it was years ago. The engine compartment in the F-150 is quite large. The engine itself is not large. The turbos are down underneath. Everything has aerodynamic covers and shields on it, and it is what it is. We had very little problem finding a tack signal to one of the coils once we took the plastic engine cover off. And other than that, I have to say that it's pretty good for what it is, considering that the motor is down low in the, this was a four-wheel drive truck, so it was down low in, you know, based upon the height of the fender and the body. But like I say, as far as new vehicles are concerned, it really was quite serviceable. But I really don't think, other than changing the oil and the air filter, that you're really going to need to do much to it over its lifetime. So to recap now on this truck as we come to a close: excellent build quality, drivetrain, which is the engine, transmission, is fantastic. Ride quality on the highway is excellent, with the big 22-inch Pirelli tires and no load in the back. It was a little bit jouncy and bouncy, which you would tend to think on a pickup truck with an unloaded bed. All of the attributes of an F-150 is still there in a gussied up high horsepower version. So the tires were quiet. I don't know if I would want to, you know, take them in the corn, in a muddy cornfield or not, but the tires, for what I did, I did a wet grass backup test here in the farm, because that was the best I could do. And in two-wheel drive, backing up a hill with the truck on very wet grass, is that it didn't spin a tire or evoke the traction control. But also, that comes in, coming back to that torque converter, because you could just add that power in such a smooth linear fashion that you're not breaking that tire loose. So the tires were fine for what I used it for, and the serviceability looks pretty good. So I'm going to now close by telling you what I like about the truck and what I don't like about it. Okay, we'll start what I like. The truck is gorgeous. There's no denying it. It's comfortable. It's quiet. It's smooth. Gets great fuel economy for what it is. Has a ton of power. I have to say, you know, the top of the list is the drive line on that truck. The seats are comfortable, but the drive line is really, and that's really what the Limited is about. You're buying the Raptor drive line in a platinum body. So the drive line is fantastic and would serve any farmer wonderfully if he's using this. This is using this truck to work. This is a great truck for someone who does a lot of traveling, maybe with a travel trailer, shows cattle, shows horses, tows any type of trailer, camper trailer, what have you, and they're looking for a quiet luxury ride with the work capacity of an F-150 and the 450 horsepower engine. But it is priced at $74,000, and with all of the amenities in it, that's under my dislikes. With all of the amenities, I don't know whether I would really use this as a down and dirty farm truck. Not that it can't do it. Don't confuse it with that. It's not that it cannot do that. The whole idea is that with the power running boards, the leather seat, the plush carpeting, the leather covered dashboard pieces, I don't think I would want to go into the go fix a flat tire on a center pivot with it. Not that she can't do it, but I don't think that the interior and all the amenities are really not set up for somebody getting there with a pair of her greasy work pants. So that's under the dislike. But like I said, that's all. If you, God will, okay, God bless you. If you're in that demographic where you can afford that, that's wonderful. But I don't think that I would do that personally. But my major dislike on the truck, it's to my thinking, it's way too gadgety. Too many gadgets, too many buttons, little icons. This truck had the Ford Co-Pilot 360, which is a lane avoidance, keeps you in a lane and does automatic braking. You are able to shut it off, but you have to go pretty deep into the menu of the onboard computer system through the steering wheel controls, and it lights up on dashboard to shut it off. The good thing about it, when you do shut it off, it does not come back on with every restart. The truck also had start-stop, so when you came to a longer traffic light or stop, it would shut the engine off. The start-stop works flawlessly. It actually recognizes any movement on the brake pedal and uses that to start the engine. So as you start to release the brake, a lot of the earlier systems, you had to release the brake and step on the throttle for it to start. But it does have a button very right on the dashboard, and it does have a button there to shut it off. So if you are in traffic or doing something that, or talking to somebody, and you don't want to shut off, what have you, that's very easy. If I had my druthers, I'd have Ford put a button right next to it to shut off the Co-Pilot 360, and I'd have to jerk around into the menu to try to figure out how to shut it off. The heater and radio controls they have, like most vehicles today, especially upper-end ones, they have a LCD big display in the dashboard, and it's got these I don't like that aspect of it. I can't see nothing on the controls, the radio or the heater controls. Everything else, the wipers and everything, that was fine. The HVAC controls, the radio controls, the climate control, and everything was intuitive. And I find that to be distracted driving. I want to be able to go and push a button and just know what button I'm pushing or what knob I'm turning to turn it to blow a speed up or to make it hotter or cooler or go from defroster to vent or what have you. And you could not do that with this. And the truck had so many features and there's so many buttons. They got these little icons in it, and you can't make head or tail of what they are, nor do you care what they are. So, in essence, great truck, fantastic build quality, wonderful fuel economy. If you're a guy who's going to buy the latest iPhone and you don't mind all the gadgets, then the gadgety stuff I particularly didn't care for. But I can say to you that the Hot Rod Farmer truly, truly recommends this truck to anyone who is in the market, the F-150 Limited, for a luxury pickup truck that, I said, she looks city, but she works country. You have a blessed day, and thank you so much for listening.